Accession number 31425, Mr. Mike Gagan, Reel 3. Now, while we're talking about any other training you do with a Home Guard, there's these exercises on Hackney Marshes. Anything else you remember?
Well, they used to, you'd also go out at night for night fighting. In the evening, especially in the winter when it was dark, you'd go out and you might have a rendezvous to keep. And in that meantime, the Home Guard would be guarding it so that you can't reach it. But you've got to try and reach it, you know. And it was Dad's army all over again. It was really terrific. And, you know, and some of those people, although they were getting on in years, they were so alert and everything like this, you had to admire them, you know.
Old soldiers from the First World War.
Maybe. Yep, yep.
Now, anything else about training before we go into when you went to?
No, well, as I say, it was training there. Oh, we went to a couple of ACAC sites.
tell me about that.
There was one up in Chingford, up by Pole Hill, I think it was, up on Chingford Plains. They had the aircraft site, anti-aircraft guns up there, mostly with a lot of Home Guards. There was the regular soldiers, but mostly with the Home Guards. They were there, and a lot of the Home Guards, the younger people, were people who were on war work, which they couldn't go into the services, but they worked all hours in the war works, what they was doing, but overnight they might be on all night, so they might be working 22 hours a day.
And what were the gun sights like, the anti-aircraft guns? Are they 3.7s, these guns?
They were the big ACAC guns. I don't know what they were then, you know, a couple of Bofors as well.
And would you actually get a go, or was it just a visit?
We visited, and also they'd let us fire. Once, you know, only once, the aircraft coming over, they got the range, and they say, quick, pull that trigger, you'd pull it and jump about 10 foot backwards, you know. It was just to give you the feel of what it was like, you know. And also we'd go up there, even not without the army cadets, they knew us and everything like that. We'd go around and help clean up and sweep up, do anything to what we could do, you know, to help them.
Now, any other training you got before you went to Caterham? Bayonet training? I should have asked before.
Yeah, we did have bayonet training. That was only into sacks, you know, sacks of straw, things like this. You charged and everything like that.
Were they still teaching you to shout and scream as you did that, or did they not do that with kids?
They didn't teach you, you know, you to shout, charge, like, you know, and you'd thrust with a bayonet.
But you weren't doing all the bloodthirsty screaming they teach men?
Oh, no. And also, even with a Sten gun, we had the 6-inch bayonet on the end, but you still had to learn. And with that, you wouldn't go charging into something. As you got to the sack, there'd be no bullets or nothing like this, no rounds anywhere. You had to hit it with your Sten gun, pull it round, swing it round, and give it, you know. So, but for 13-year-olds, it give you a good insight into life.
Now tell me about going. What did you do when you went to Caterham for it? Was it a week or 2 weeks?
We went for 10 days.
Who went? All of you?
A lot of us. They sent an army truck and they took us down to Caterham in this army open army truck, and we were cramped. and
this is to the actual guards depot.
Yes.
Now what do you remember of your training there?
And just inside, when we got in, there was the chapel, and there were the spider huts and everything. And we were taken and put into the huts. And there was big guardsman there, and on his arm he had trained soldier, a star, and it had trained soldier. And you took notice of him, and he'd be very nice at the beginning, but then you had to have discipline. And they give you some kit first of all, they'd give you a medical when you went in. You had to have a medical to see how tall you was, what you weighed, anything wrong with you, and things like this. And then they took us into the cookhouse and gave us some food, which was, we thought was marvellous, because they give you a meal, which we hadn't all had together, you know what I mean? So we're in there. There was the RSM walking up and down, making sure no one got out of order. And then we had to go to, we had to go and learn all about everything. But also, on a Sunday, we all had to attend a church parade. And they'd say, what are you? What denomination? But I think we were all the same those days, you know.
C of E.
Yeah, as long as you got in the church, you didn't worry, you know. So, but it was a good time.
And what do you remember the actual training you did with them? Was it any different, or was it just more of the same?
No, it was harder than what we've ever had, because the training what the guards give you, they was giving the same to the army cadets as what they was giving to the men. And you was over obstacle courses, marching, and you'd be on the square any time. And if you didn't hear the order properly, then they'd call you out and ask you if you were deaf and everything, and you'd get back in line. Or they'd make you go and walk up and down and do it in front of all the lot, so you knew what was happening next time you shouted out. And it was hard, but it was good, because that was the first time I'd ever been away on holiday. So, you know, it was quite good.
And did you get any promotion? I mean, what happened when you got back?
Well, you didn't get promotion or anything like that, for the simple reason that you had enough NCOs and you couldn't, and you had these few people from World War One, instructors and that. You'd have a couple of people, like, and we had one fella, he was a sergeant major, he was about 17, and he was a bit strict, they had promoted him and that, but he was a really good bloke, you know. And as soon as he was old enough, he went into the army, and it gave him a good insight when he went into the army, you know.
So what happened next then? I mean, what's the next thing you remember happening? Because you'd leave school. I don't know whether you'd still be in the Army Cadets when you left school, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I was still in the Army Cadets when I left school.
So tell me about leaving school.
Well, I left school when
was
I was...
Was there any chance of staying on or...?
No. I had to come out more or less to help to keep me old mother and father.
And
you'd
leave school, what, in August 42? Well, at the end of the...
43.
So when you were 15?
No, 14.
Sorry, I've got your date of birth wrong there. That's my fault entirely. I got you as 28. I misheard.
Yeah.
So 1943.
I left school, and I went into a factory which were making brushes, and these were mostly gun brushes for cleaning out artillery guns and everything like that, and pull-throughs, brushes. And also, it used to be called Henderson's Brush Factory. They made shaving brushes for troops, everything like that. And then they started making clogs, because shoes were hard to come by. And out of timber, they were making like the soles for clogs, and just putting over straps to make them footwear, things like that. And I was there.
What was life like? What was your job in the factory? As a young 14-year-old,
I was working tying all the. One of the main jobs I had was tying shaving brushes, and that was like, and you had to be piecework at 14. And you had to keep going all the time. And when I'm saying piecework, sometimes it was that hard. It's all according what brushes you had to do. It was little bristles, and you had to tie every one. And they were dipped in glue, and then put in an oven. and you had to do, I think, faintly, roughly 140 a minute, 140 an hour. Well, when you're tying them up, and if you look at it, you've got 60 minutes. You've got to do two of them, a minute, and you're tying like that, tripping it in, cutting it, and then again, tripping it in, cutting it. Now I was working from 8 till 6, and 8 till 1 Saturday. And if you was 2 minutes late, you lost a quarter of an hour in the morning, and you had to clock in. And those days, you didn't mess about with no one. You had to be there, and if you didn't turn up, then you was in trouble. And there was people that you was directed into, a lot of people directed into factories, those boys as well, by the government, not by the authorities, and you had to go to work there. You couldn't go and do what job you wanted, and that was that.
And what was it like working in a factory? I mean, you know, it sounds very hard.
It was very hard, and the discipline in there was, even for the women, you know, was pretty hard as well. But the only thing was, you could get a dinner, not rationed, you know, you'd go and buy a dinner, and they'd get food allowed for the workers. So you was sure of a dinner, which was good, you know. But it was hard graft. And then,
were you unionised at all or anything like that? Union? Did you have a union?
No, never heard of a union, yeah. But also, you got, on a Saturday morning, my main job, it was like a chamber, I suppose about the width of this window, round, coming round like that.
About 8 feet in the diameter.
Yeah, and it'd be full of air off a little bristle, maybe the cuttings, perhaps an eighth of an inch long, but it could be about 3 foot high inside. Over the weeks, like all the hundreds of women what was working in there and different things, and everything used to go into there. And my job would be to go in there with overalls, a mask and a towel around my head every Saturday morning to clean it all out. And I had to crawl in, and there'd be a door about 2 foot high, and they'd pull that up, and I had to get in. And as I'm shoveling and I'm going in, I've got to get over to the other side, and I've got the mask on and cloth over my head and everything. And I think I used to get threepence extra for that, you know. But I did it, you know, anything to earn a few bob, like, you know, because I used to help my mother and that, because she hadn't got nothing, you know. And that was it.
And how long did you do that for?
43
till?
Yeah, until about 44. Yeah, about 44.
So you were still in the Army Cadets?
Yeah.
And doing that work as well? So.
Yeah. And then,
were you in anything else?
No, not at that time.
And what about the bombing in 43, 44?
Well, the bombing was still pretty bad and everything.
Any other incidents you remember?
We had, where I used to live up in West Avenue Road, just across the road in West Avenue, distance of about a couple of hundred foot, a train come through one day. There was a steam train, and the planes see the fire and followed it down and bombed it, and they hit the bridge, and a couple of hundred foot from my house. So of course all the windows, ceilings, everything down again. And we had that a couple of times happen, and then we had the flying bomb come over, the V1.
Now tell me about that.
Well, the V1 come over, and you didn't hear them until perhaps the air raid had go, and then you'd hear the engine, and then all of a sudden the engine had cut out. And you didn't know where it was going to land. And many, many times they got through, because a lot of the planes, fighter planes, used to bring them down if they see them. But if it's cloud and it is coming through, you didn't see them at all. And the Germans had them, enough fuel in there to come to London. And then they'd come over for the height of London. And me and my old mother was indoors once, and one came over, and we thought it was our plane, like, because them days, if the air raid warnings went, you didn't rush into the shelters like you used to. And we heard this plane coming over, and the engine shut down, and it dropped at the end of the road on the corner of High Street, Walthamstow. And I went rushing round to, we used to go, any bombs dropped, we used to go round to try and help get them out and everything. And many people got killed in that. It was a fish queue, and the plane come over, and people there thought it was one of ours. The engine cut out and come down right on the fish queue. And many people got killed. And then I got injured with one and got taken into
it. Tell me the story of that. What were you doing? How did it get you?
Well, I'd come out of Leighton swimming baths. And the air raid warning had gone. So I thought, well, I'd go out. And I came out and I jumped on my bike, and I was just coming out, and the engine must have shut out, and I didn't hear it. And as I've jumped on my bike, last I remember, and I woke up in Whipps Cross Hospital. And they didn't know who I was, because you got the air, I had a gas mask, but that had gone somewhere, and my old bike. And I woke up in Whipps Cross Hospital, and they didn't know who I was. And then when I did come, because I'd been unconscious for hours, and they told, let me mother and father know. And then they come down to see me in the hospital. And the next day, they kept me in, and because I'd been badly blasted and smashed up against the wall, and I was covered in bruises, all my shoulders and that. And the next day, I'd come out, and my mother says to the doctor, he's come in all out in ringworm. And I had all these little round spots all over me, and he said, it's not ringworm, it's shock coming out. He said, if the shock didn't come out, he said, you'd be very ill. He said, having the shock come out, that is good. And there's also, you know, that was there, but the flying bombs used to come over. But I'd left the factory then.
Now, what was your next job then?
I was working on the building, and demolition.
What house?
Like the handyman going round.
As a labourer?
Yeah. Yeah. Going round, we used to do all the bomb damage, put up the windows, putting felt up the windows, no glass hardly or nothing like that. It was mostly repairing the bombing and things like that, you know.
And who would pay you? Was that be paid by the household, or was it the government?
Oh, no. I worked for a builder, but the government was paying the builder.
So this is different from in the times when you had bomb damage and you had to sort it out yourself.
Oh, yeah, this. This, the government was paying, and the builders, they had contracts, and the man I worked for, his name was Barklam in Walthamstow, and he had them all during the war in this area, and he'd employ anyone, you know. Even fellas come home on leave, they'd get a job with him for a week or two, and, you know, plastering or...
And what was the work like? It's a good way of learning the building trade, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, it was an odd way, and you went round, and you'd have these big two-wheeled barrows, and you'd have that barrow filled right up with stuff, ladders and everything, rolls of felt, everything like this, battens, now everything. And you've got to go, and perhaps, no windows, you've got to cover it all up because of the weather and things like this. Or tarpaulins, you get a big ladder, you've got to get up on the roof, got no roof, you've got to cover it over. And, you know,
so you wouldn't be rebuilding a roof, you just sling some tarpaulin over it.
If it wasn't too bad, if it was like slates off, and they had the slate, then it would be repaired. But other than that, you'd have a tarpaulin right over it until they could come up and put a new roof on or something like that. You know, So
did you enjoy the work?
Oh, very much, very much.
What did you concentrate on? Plastering, woodwork, or just everything?
You had to do everything in those days. It wasn't one. And what I used to do, make up all the plaster, which was now, you call it cool stuff. Now you've got bonding and all like that, but then it was sand and lime and horsehair. You had horsehair in it, and you might have to mix up in a special area, but in the builder's yard, you got to mix up 4 or 5 yards at a time by hand. You had to do all that by hand, and then you'd shovel it, put it on these two big two-wheel carts, what they used to have, and then they'd take it to any job, what's got to be done, plastered up the wall or anything, and you do that, you know. And it was.
And that was from 1944?
Yeah.
And how long were you doing that?
Oh, I did that until I went into the army. I was on the demolition as well.
Now, tell me about the demolition.
Well, it was mostly over Stoke Newington, in that area, Stoke Newington. And I worked for a Mr. Jones. And we used to go round, you know, you'd knock walls down or anything. But also, we had to shovel. We had a truck, and we had to do 3 loads a day and take it to Hackney Marshes, go around the streets picking all the rubbish up. You got to shovel it up. You didn't have no mechanical means. Shoveling 3 loads a day, 2 in the morning, 1 in the afternoon, and from Stoke Newington to take it to Hackney Marshes. And Hackney Marshes have been built up 3 or 4 foot, the whole complete lot. If you look under that, you find it's all brick rubble and everything from the bombs in London. And also the army used to be over there as well, with army camps and ACAC sites and different things like that.
So did you enjoy all this work?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, so what about recreation? Were your interests changing as you're getting older?
I still kept on with a boxing club, but when you're working and shoveling up all day and things like this, you didn't feel like going out. You know, you got things to do, and the air raids were still, you know, it was still the war was still on. But we used to go to dances.
And what was the dance like in this? Because it's all, I mean, it's just a different world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dance, what was the dance hall like?
We used to go to, main one was in Walthamstow Avenue Football Club. And you find it used to be really a good atmosphere. Everything would be outside, would be all black. But inside, it'd be under the football stand. And they'd have an orchestra and every band there. And you find a load of people, men and women, come home and leave, especially Saturdays and Sundays, you know, when it used to be open. And it used to be a lovely atmosphere.
Everyone, what was it like in there?
Oh, it was beautiful. You know, everyone was friendly. You could buy beer and stuff like that. And and food started to come in a bit as well, because we were getting stuff from America, you know what I mean? And you was getting a bit extra, like they might have a few cakes on sale or something, or sandwiches, which...
But it was there was drink as well. You started drinking a bit underage then?
Yeah, you'd have half a pint or a pint, something like that.
It's a social drink.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you didn't go out looking for trouble them days or nothing like that. Otherwise, you'd find it, you know.
And what were the who provided the music?
There was any local band, and some of those was really good, you know, on the local people, you know, they have their own bands.
Big bands or small, you know, or four
around,
or five.
Around about 4 or 5 people, you know, but it was good. But you didn't have all the music what you got these days, you know. It'd be the band, and you didn't have records and all like that. It'd be music which you could, and you'd all be doing the okey cokey at the end.
And how did you learn to dance? I mean, could you do waltzes, quick steps?
Oh yeah, I could do.
Or did you
just pick it up? And my sisters, you know, my oldest sister, she used to be a good swimmer and dancer and everything, an athlete, you know.
So that's the dance horse. And you go on your own, and I mean, presumably you meet girlfriends and the rest of it.
Oh yeah, I used to meet some girls, and and walk them home in the blackout, you know, and things like this.
Now, what about other recreation? What about the cinema?
The cinemas was on, yeah. And you'd go into the cinema, you know. And I was in the Ritz at Leighton once, and we were sitting there, about four of us, all sitting, and the next minute, the door's blown in. There'd been a bomb dropped or something, you know, and so the air raid warnings are going, it'll come up on the screen, the cinema will be carrying on, but you can leave if you want to, and put up the nearest air raid shield, and this had come up on the screen, you know. And lots of people were so used to it that they just couldn't have cared less. And then one day we're sitting there, and the next minute, boom, the doors are in.
See, and what was popular in the cinema for you? I mean, you know, I mean, it's a bit difficult because the film, you can still see the films today on the telly, but I mean, yeah. What was possible? What would you go and see in those days?
Well, what was, it was the old cowboy films, I think, was the main ones there, like, you know, Buck Jones, Tom Keene, everyone like that. And when you come out, when you was a kid, when you come out, the speed, longer piece of wood you had, you'd beat your mates beating the horse running home, you know what I mean? And it used to be, it was a terrific atmosphere in them, but sometimes you take an hooter in the picture, you know, and someone will be coming round on a bike, you know, you press the old hooter, and the next minute everyone's killing themselves laughing, and the next minute the ushers are down trying to find out who's got the hooter and things like that, you know. We used to have a bit of fun in there, you know.
And what about other things you'd go to? I mean, was snooker big then? Not snooker, it would be billiards, wouldn't it?
No.
Anything else you'd do for fun?
I can't think. Well, we should go out cycling all round here in the Epping Forest and things like that, you know.
So the cycling code. Now, what about V2 raids? Just coming into, we're getting towards the end of the war now.
The V2, they was very dodgy.
Now, tell us about them, because you can't hear them coming, can
you? No, you couldn't hear them coming. And one had dropped in Walthamstow, and we had to go down to do bomb damage repair on that one. And my friend lives up in Erse Road. We was on the roof, pulling a felt over, pulling a big sheet over, and a V2 fell about two turnings away, and we just held onto the sheet, otherwise we'd have been off the roof as well. And it had come in practically within a few hundred yards of the one that had dropped that night before. So they had it all set out.
Are they much bigger explosions, aren't they? Are they bigger than the V1s even?
Yeah. They was a hell of a lot, because the V1... What happened there? It was a plane, but you also had the fuel weight of the fuel lifting that off the ramp, where a rocket is something like the what they use for the moon rockets now. I mean, they were the forerunners of the rockets to the moon and everything. So they used to just put everything in there, put them in the range. Put the amount of fuel, and over there coming. I think the first one, I think we ever fell on London, was in Lewisham. I think that was the first one. But you didn't know where they were coming. I've been there, and when one, it fell within a few hundred yards of me, and all I heard was, whew, that was all I heard, and the next minute a big explosion, like, and you're down, you know.